Rock 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the show. It's everyone's favorite day of the week, Wednesday. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you for the program. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's come up in our news coverage, you'll hear about it on Our Take in a more extended fashion. We chat with individuals who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. Several things to talk about on today's program. First, we'll talk to the Berrien County Health Department about emergency preparedness. The floods we had recently reminded us all that it's a good idea to be well prepared for such disasters far in advance of them occurring. So I caught up with the health department's Jillian Conrad. She'll come in here again and chat with us about emergency preparedness and also about some of the things that the health department did in the last several weeks to help out people affected by floods. Also on today's program, we will chat with the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan. They recently received a challenge grant of $700,000. That's a big one. And I caught up with the Humane Society's Jill Sabota to learn about this challenge grant, what it's for, how you can help the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan get everything it needs as it prepares to move into a new headquarters in Royalton Township. We'll also hear from State Senator John Prose. Yesterday, he announced some interesting ideas for prison food service. The governor wants to unprivatize prison food services in Michigan to bring all those services back in-house after the state had some not-so-great luck with private food service providers for our corrections facilities. So Senator Prose had some ideas on how that could be turned into an opportunity to train prisoners. We'll hear from him. And we'll talk with AAA about daylight saving. You know, this is the week after we moved our clocks ahead, so everyone lost an hour of sleep. AAA says that creates an opportunity to remind everyone to drive safely. And on today's show, we'll find out what Benton Harbor School Board did last night. They talked about several things. We'll hear about that on Our Take. If you'd like to weigh in on something that we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake at WSJM.com. That is O-U-R-T-A-K-E. At WSJM.com, News Talk 94.9, WSJM. This is Our Take. Time for a quick break. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9, WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of the program. Right now, for this segment of the show, I thought we'd check in with the Berrien County Health Department. Once again, I recently chatted with spokesperson Jillian Conrad about emergency preparedness and you. And the health department has some tips for things people can do to make sure they are well prepared for disaster situations well before they occur. And we heard from Jillian last week. Let's check in with her again and hear what the Berrien County Health Department had to tell me about emergency preparedness. All right, we're talking to Berrien County Health Department spokesperson Jillian Conrad. Now, you wanted to talk to us about disaster preparedness. We know we've had these floods around Berrien County recently.
Absolutely. So, and we also know that it is a really great time to be thinking about emergency preparedness. Generally, people have, just what do I need to do to prepare for an emergency on their mind, specifically after our community has gone through a somewhat traumatic event in the last couple of weeks with the floods. We know we still have many families that are affected that will continue to have to clean up their homes, kind of return to what might be a new normal for them. So they're definitely still on our minds, but this is a great time to be thinking about what can we do as individuals, as families, as a community to prepare for the next potential emergency. Mm-hmm. Floods are something that we haven't seen flooding like we did in the last couple of weeks for, I think I heard somewhere in 400 or 500 years. This was definitely an exceptional sort of event, but that's not the last time it's going to rain here. Mm-hmm. And there is the potential that we could experience flooding, maybe not to that magnitude, but, it is Michigan and we have extreme weather and we could potentially experience similar sorts of events in the future. So this is a great time to be talking about emergency preparedness and what people need to be doing.
So let's talk flooding. What can someone do in advance to have themselves be prepared for a possible flood?
Sure, absolutely. So I want to encourage people to visit a website that has really great simple tips. It's called Do One Thing. DoOneThing.org. .com. DoOneThing.com.
You spell out the number one?
It is just one.
Do number one thing.
Yes. DoNumberOneThing.com. That website has small steps towards being prepared for an emergency. So each month, in fact, they have a different tip that you can take and act upon. And over the course of a year, you take these steps to becoming more prepared. So a couple of really simple ones that people need to be thinking about. First and foremost is kind of making a plan. Thinking about what would I do or what would my family do in the case of an emergency? What are those sorts of emergencies? And this website can definitely help think through the different kinds of emergencies, whether they're, natural disasters or flooding, a weather event, a public health emergency, those sorts of things. What would we do in that circumstance? A lot of the actions are about building an emergency preparedness kit. So, they say to have a 3-day emergency food supply in your household, water as well for people. You can take steps to make sure that any dietary needs or special needs of your family will be taken care of and have those things on hand and ready to go. Those are some really simple tips. But one thing that is really important is having a family communication plan. If an emergency happens, if something occurs, do you know how you're going to get in touch with your family members? Do you have a meeting spot, for instance? Do you have a plan for how you're going to get in touch with your kids? If your kids are in school that day, what are you going to do? What, as a family unit, are you going to do when that emergency happens? Do you have an extra phone charger in your car? Do you have an extra phone charger somewhere or an extra battery pack just in case the power goes out? Power outages are pretty common around here, especially when we tend to have big storms that go on. Those are important things to be thinking about. And just thinking about how your family is going to stay in touch, where you're going to go, where you're going to meet up. And talking about this with your kids is really important. For children, emergencies can be very traumatic events. It can really disrupt their life, their normal. And we know that even, small disruptions to especially little kids to their lives and routines can feel somewhat traumatic and bring on a certain amount of stress for them. So speaking with your kids about how you as a family are preparing, what, you as mom and dad are going to be doing, where they can expect to be meeting up, how they can expect to be communicated with, those sorts of things, making sure that they know they're going to be safe. They're going to be taken care of. If mom and dad aren't there, there's other grownups that they can rely on. Those sorts of things will really help prepare children for the potential emergencies that could happen and kind of build up that mental resilience for them. And so if something were to happen, it wouldn't be so traumatic, as traumatic as if they were completely unprepared.
Mm. All right. So, now we had the floods. So you mentioned this emergency kit and so forth. You should probably do you want that kit to be mobile, something you can grab and
right, absolutely. So they do recommend, maybe putting it in a backpack, having, some things ready to go in a backpack or a duffel bag. I've seen some people have their kits in a large Rubbermaid container that can just be thrown in the back of the car pretty quickly. Other things that you might want to consider doing aside from, a food supply, water supply, flashlights, a weather radio, batteries, of course, are a good thing, an extra phone charger, perhaps, any special medications that, your family might need. If you were to needing to evacuate your house, for instance, and we know that that happened in the last couple of weeks, there were so many families that had to leave, with maybe an hour's notice. And it's really hard to think through, okay, what do I need and how long am I going to be gone and what am I going to come to when I return to my home? What is it going to be like? Documents, birth certificates, social security cards, marriage licenses, those things that are really important documents you need to have with you kind of throughout your life, have those readily accessible. So in a folder, in a file cabinet, somewhere that you could grab those quickly if you needed to evacuate and make a quick exit. All of those things, you need to be just thinking through those things. And that's where this DoOneThing.com website really helps families think through, okay, what would I need to do in an emergency? What kind of emergencies might I need to respond to in Berrien County here, for instance? How am I going to be speaking with my family about that? And how am I going to execute a plan so that if something happens, we're taken care of and we're able to be safe, we know where we're going, and it's not quite as traumatic.
Great. And, you know, I suppose if you live in an area that might get floods, keep important things sort of elevated, maybe.
That's probably a good idea. I mean, this is Michigan. There's water all around us. And, you know, I've heard that if you've got a basement in Michigan, it's going to flood at some point. Mm. So it's kind of one of those inevitabilities that there's going to be moisture, there's going to be water. But yes, there are certainly tips that we can all be taking, actions we can be taking to make sure that the things we need, if we were needing to evacuate, or the documents that we need to keep safe, are not in harm's way of flooding.
All right. And, you know, speaking of the flooding, oh, first of all, a reminder of that website, dothenumberonething.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And do we know who runs that site? Is it like a...
It's FEMA.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really a great website. Of course, FEMA also has a lot of really great preparedness things, as does the CDC. So, you know, even if you just hit a Google search of, you know, making an emergency preparedness plan or family emergency preparedness plan, there's a lot of great sites that pop up. FEMA actually has a really wonderful resource for kids, and getting those kids involved in preparing for an emergency. They have some interactive booklets that they can do, kind of workbooks, and all, like I said, for helping those children understand what might happen, what they can expect, and just building up that confidence and resilience that those kids might need when faced with, you know, an event like this.
All right. Yeah. And also, you can keep an emergency kit in your car. I also have like some items stashed in my trunk.
Yeah, that's for just the weather that you might encounter. I know, you know, Michigan State Police recommends that every year when we're coming on winter, that people should be thinking about what supplies they need to have in their car if they were to encounter a winter storm, if they were to slide off the road and be stuck for a number of hours, thinking through those sorts of things. And again, you know, there's lots of actions that people can be taking. Just be thinking through these things. That's the real message that we're trying to encourage people. Just to be thinking about it, go online, research what potential emergencies we might be encountering here, whether they're weather related, public health related, all of those sorts of things, and be thinking through that plan. You might not need to have, you know, a really fancy kit or anything like that, but a couple of supplies set aside and a good solid plan will really help you when we have emergencies.
All right. As long as we're talking about the floods, I know the health department's been doing a lot to help people affected by those floods. I know you've been testing wells. Is that right?
Absolutely. So that was kind of the first and foremost concern for the Berrien County Health Department when responding to these floods, was looking at the drinking water quality for people with private wells. So we know that in Berrien County, not everybody is connected to a municipal water source. Some people have private drinking water wells on their properties. And the potential for floodwaters to get into that well and potentially contaminate that water were really great. You know, the floodwater, it's not clean. You probably heard the messages that don't go in the floodwater, don't swim in it, don't kayak in it, don't let your kids play in it. And that's because it's touching everything that's on the ground. There were several sewage plants that, you know, were flooded, experienced some flooding. So you can pretty much be safe in saying that the floodwater has, you know, some sewage, human feces, other sorts of gross things, contaminants, organisms that can make you sick, all sorts of things that are in it. So we were really cautioning people, you know, stay out of the floodwaters if you can avoid it. If you have to go in it, you know, definitely wear protective gear, boots, waders, gloves, those sorts of things, even maybe a mask. But so the Berrien County Health Department did a lot with the folks that have the private drinking water wells. We went out door to door in areas that we knew were affected by the heavy flooding and the areas that had those private wells. We talked with residents. We posted notices on people's doors who we weren't able to make contact with when we were out and about. But we made sure that everybody with those private wells knew they should consider their drinking water to be unsafe until tested and proven otherwise.
Is it safe now, or are they still?
We are still conducting testing. We're still working with a lot of homeowners. The Berrien County Health Department is facilitating those tests to happen and making sure that they're laboratory confirmed to be safe to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're really concerned about with the water there is mostly E. coli, but potentially other contaminants. And if a well were to come up positive for having, you know, say E. coli or some other contaminant, there is a process for disinfecting that well that needs to happen before it's really safe to drink. So yeah, our sanitarians did a lot. I think we ended up visiting over 100 homes in Berrien County, working with those homeowners or landlords, making sure that those wells could be tested. And if there were the case of any positives, that they could go through the process of disinfecting those and making sure that they were safe to drink.
There were cleanups this past weekend in both Berrien Springs and Niles. Was the health department there for those?
We weren't. I know we had a couple of people just privately, you know, wanting to volunteer and help out friends and family in their community. But the health department was not necessarily involved in organizing those cleanup efforts. That really was the Red Cross and United Way. They did a phenomenal job of really recruiting people. And I have to say, you know, the community coming together, really showing up and wanting to volunteer, wanting to get involved, you know, donating funds, donating items, supplies. It was so neat to see our community come together. You know, this flooding, it could have been a lot worse. It was devastating for the people who were truly affected by it, but it could have been a lot worse. But it was really neat to see our community come together and really help out those families in need.
All right. Anything else you want to tell us about?
Well, you know, we are still just encouraging people as they're returning to their homes. There are a couple of health risks that they might need to be thinking about. You know, we have put out a couple of press releases. We have a lot of great information available on our website, which is www.bchdmi.org. We have a quick link on our homepage that takes you to all the flooding resources. But we've got some tips there just about how to avoid any illness, you know, when cleaning up around floodwaters, because like I mentioned, there can be some nasty bugs and germs in that flood water. So definitely just basic personal hygiene is the number one thing. So washing your hands, you know, and washing your body if your body is having any contact with that flood water. You know, we've had some people ask questions about, you know, well, my basement was flooded. I had some food down there, you know, in a pantry or whatever. Can I eat that food? Our answer is no. If the floodwaters touched any of those foods, even if it was just a box, you know, of pasta or rice or something like that, jar, cans, we're just recommending when in doubt, throw it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was a can that was completely unopened, there are ways that you can kind of sanitize around that can and consume that. But a lot of the families who experienced flooding also had their power shut off during that time for risk of electrocution and those sorts of things.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people did lose an entire refrigerator's worth of food, let's say. So that was unfortunate. But yeah, food safety is definitely something that we're considering and thinking about. And we've had a lot of questions about mold, because we know anytime that there's moisture present, there's the potential for mold growth. And unfortunately, this isn't something that the Berrien County Health Department has, you know, jurisdiction over per se. We don't have, our sanitarians are not licensed in mold removal. So they can definitely help advise and point people in the right direction of where they can go for more information, but we're not able to come out and do inspections in people's homes and that sort of thing. So we are just making the recommendation that if there is mold present, you know, when you're returning to your home, when you're mucking out your basement, you're seeing that, to contact a licensed contractor, somebody who's specialized in mold abatement and removal, because it can be a tricky process and it might just be one that you want to leave up to a professional. Because we know that there are a lot of health hazards associated with mold.
Okay, that was the Berrien County Health Department's Jillian Conrad and I chatting last week about emergency preparedness and you, and also about what the health department has done to help out people in the past month or so affected by flooding down in Berrien Springs, Niles. There were some in Royalton Township, Sotus Township. Health department's been involved in the response to that. Of course, yesterday, actually the day before yesterday, Governor Rick Snyder issued a disaster declaration for the state. For 17 counties, including Berrien, following the floods. So that side of things is now shaping up, the state providing assistance, reimbursements, really, to counties and local governments for their flood response. The health department's been involved in all that. I appreciate Jillian's time talking with us. on Our Take. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and it's time for a break. When we come back, we will talk with the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan and find out about this rather sizable challenge grant that they've received as they prepare to move into a new facility. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around, and we will be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the program. Right now, I thought we'd chat with the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan. The reason why is, word went out last week, the Humane Society has received a $700,000 challenge grant. This is sort of like a matching grant, and it's specifically to help the Humane Society as it moves into a new facility. You know, for the past couple of years, the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan, they've been working on building a new headquarters, a new shelter in Royalton Township. It's on M139, and it's a very nice facility. They're preparing to move in right now, just waiting for final approvals, permits, sewer permits, things like that. From the township, they're going to move out of the old place in Benton Township. And so here comes this challenge grant from the Yeager family to help them in general. I caught up with the Humane Society director, Jill Sabota, to hear about this. So let's hear what she had to tell me about their challenge grant and how you can help. Okay, Jill, so the Humane Society has put out word. You're the recipient of a rather sizable challenge grant here from the Yeager family. Tell us a bit more about it.
We have a $700,000 challenge grant offered by the Yeager family, Steve and Hilda Banyan, Phil and Sue Radix, and Eric and Tiffany Jackson, and also John and Karen Janik. They are offering a $700,000 challenge grant to benefit the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan, our capital building fund, and also our endowment fund. So what this is a generous two-for-one match for every dollar raised toward the capital building fund. So that means that for every dollar donated to the Capital Building Fund, up to $350,000 total, the challenge grant will pay $1 to the Capital Building Fund and also a dollar to the Humane Society Endowment Fund that's being held at the Bering Community Foundation. So if we meet this challenge, we'll bring a total of more than $1 million to the Humane Society.
Okay, great. So you have to reach $350,000. What does this mean for the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan should you reach this goal?
We will pull it off.
Yes.
And what it'll mean is a speedy mortgage payoff for the building, so we will own the building free and clear. And also, it gives us an endowment fund that will add some sustainability to the organization as a whole. I need to mention that in recognition of this challenge grant, the new Humane Society shelter will be named the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan Yeager Family Pet Shelter.
Great. So can you tell us more about the Yeagers? I take it they're big Humane Society supporters.
The Yeagers have been longtime supporters of the Humane Society. They attend our Bids for Barks event. I believe that they have attended ever since we began, which was 10 years ago. So they've kind of been watching our story, watching us grow, watching us improve, and with the new building going up, we broke ground in June, they wanted to know how they could help more. So this definitely is a game changer for us, and we're very, very, very excited to accept their challenge grant for sure.
Okay, so how long do you have? Is there a time limit on this grant?
Nope, there's no time limit. Obviously, the quicker we raise the $350,000, the sooner our building will be paid off so we can focus on other programs and other things.
All right, and so, if somebody wants to help the Humane Society as it reaches this goal, what should they do?
Just make a donation and just put building fund in the memo. You can write a check and send it to our address at 641 South Crystal Avenue in Benton Harbor, or you can just go right online and click any donate button you see. They have paws on them, so click any of those, and all of it will be matched 2-for-1.
Okay, and we just spoke last week. You were waiting for approval to move into the new facility in Royalton Township. Any new information there on when you can make this big move?
Very soon. Very soon.
Still waiting on the okay.
Yep, still waiting. It looks like the sewer is almost complete, but we still need to get our occupancy permits and, the the fire testing and all that good stuff. So still got some inspections to get through, but the inspections won't be scheduled until our sewer is completely hooked up and ready to go. So we're still waiting on that sewer.
Well, you know, it happens. You have to wait for the right permits and all that. But because of this challenge grant, you're going to own the new shelter. You'll just
free and clear. Yep, and we'll have to work on then is you know, our normal daily needs of, you know, medical costs and food for the animals and things like that. We won't have this burden of the building hanging over, looming over us, which, you know, is really a lifesaver. If we could just focus on the animals, we could do our jobs better.
Right. Well, as Dave Ramsey would say, it's never fun to owe money.
No, it's not. And it makes our job harder because not only do we have to take care of the animals, we have to consistently raise money. So we're hoping that some of that pressure will come off with this matching grant. And we're hoping that the community will have an incentive to give to us now, because now is the time. It's being matched, you know, 2-for-1. So now is the time to give.
Okay, so I look at the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan's website, and I see you've at the sort of flipper at the top here. You've got a banner ad for it. You click it, and it'll take you to the thing, and from there, I can just make a donation.
And then you can read the press release.
There we go.
And you can hit any paw print donate button to donate. Ah.
Okay, and do I need to specify this is for the building fund if I do that?
No.
Great. Well, we're talking to the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan about their new challenge grant. Jill, is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
If you're looking for creative ways to donate or you want to have a little fun while making your donation, we have our second annual Village Charcuterie Festival coming up on April 28th. So, you know, if you buy a ticket to that event, that all gets matched too. Plus, you get to come and try some of the most unique beers, ciders, and wines in our area. It includes food taste tickets as well, and there's live entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of that stuff goes to the Jaeger match as well. So if you want to buy a ticket to one of our events and have a little fun while donating and, you know, drinking for a good cause, you know, buy a ticket to the Charcuterie Festival. Or if that's not your thing, come to our live and silent auction that we do every year. This is our 10th annual Bids for Barks year. It's going to be at the Mendel Center this year, and that's on May 19th. So you can buy a ticket or a table to that event, and all proceeds from that are going to go to the Jaeger match as well.
Okay, that was Jill Sabota, director of the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan. They've received a $700,000 challenge grant, meaning if they raise $350,000, that'll all be matched. And so if you go to their website, you can help them if you want to help the Humane Society reach that goal. And there's an ad right at the top of the page. It's in the masthead there. And there's also a masthead ad for the 10th annual Bids for Barks. That's coming up in May. We'll talk to Jill again about that as that event approaches. That's their big fundraiser. But right now they're raising money, getting ready to move into the new facility. They've got the charcuterie coming up, which is a word I didn't know until last year when Jill told me about the last one. And that's what's been going on at the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan. Big things going on over at that fine organization. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take right now. Before we go to a break, I thought I'd tell you about the latest idea from State Senator John Prose. Yesterday, he put out word he has an idea for the state's prisons. This is after Governor Rick Snyder recently proposed moving away from having private companies provide food service at the state's corrections facilities. For a while, the state's been using these private companies, but it hasn't been working out so well. The governor says they should bring that prison food service back in-house. So State Senator John Prose, who for years has been involved in corrections issues in Lansing, has got this idea that maybe inmates, nonviolent inmates, could be put to work making and serving food in the state's prisons. And he says this could help reduce recidivism by providing these individuals with job skills and possibly save some money. So Senator Prose yesterday issued an audio statement, as I'll call it, when he described his idea a little bit to us, because he has formed a work group that's studying the issue right now. Joining Prose on this work group are representatives of the Department of Corrections, the Michigan Restaurant Association, and other business leaders. They're saying, hey, now, this could be a chance for us to give prisoners job skills and also be more efficient with how food services are provided in prisons. So let's hear what Senator Prose had to say about the idea he is working on right now.
It really is an opportunity for these low-risk prisoners to gain some knowledge and skills, skills that will give them the best opportunity to succeed once they return to our communities. And it has to be remembered that 90% of all of those prisoners who go to prison in the state of Michigan end up returning to the communities that they came from. And it turns out that there are some 18,000 food service jobs currently available in the state of Michigan. Full-time positions include some 15,000 of those 18,000 total. Why can't we ensure that in this change that the governor has proposed, that we redefine the way that we do food service in the state, utilize some of these individuals who are supervising our inmate workers, give them the best opportunity to gain job skills that give them the best opportunity for the future. And there is some interest in talking about this. A work group is being established to identify how we may be able to implement during this transition that the governor has suggested the best way for us to give food service workers who already work in our prisons as prisoners the opportunity to gain those transferable job skills that give them a job outside of the prison when they return home.
All right, that's State Senator John Pro is talking about how he's working on the idea of having nonviolent inmates in the state's prisons prepare and serve the food there, as the governor wants to move away from privatized prison food services. That Senator Pro is trying to use this as an opportunity to improve the state's corrections system, and we'll keep you updated as this idea moves forward. Right now, they're just having some discussions in a work group, but this might lead to a new way of doing things in Michigan prisons, and we appreciate Senator Pro's notifying us about what he's working on. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take, and we'll take a break right now. When we come back, we'll learn about what the Benton Harbor School Board did last night, and we'll hear from AAA. They've got a driving safety reminder for everyone, this being the week right after we made a time change. If you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E. At WSJM.com, News Talk 94.9, WSJM. Stick around and we will be right back. News Talk 94.9, WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the program. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's come up in our news coverage, it will come up on Our Take in a more extended fashion. So far on today's program, we heard from the Berrien County Health Department about emergency preparedness, things everyone can do to make sure that they are ready for possible disaster scenarios. That flooding around Berrien County recently is a reminder of why you want to be ready for those sorts of things. We also talked with the Humane Society of Southwestern Michigan about what they've been up to. They recently received a large challenge grant as they prepare to move into their new headquarters. So this is a good time to make a donation to them. We heard from State Senator John Prose briefly about his latest idea. It has to do with prison food services. Senator Prose is examining the issue of whether nonviolent inmates in corrections facilities could be utilized to prepare and serve food in the state's prisons, possibly saving money, but more importantly, providing those inmates with newfound job skills. News Talk 94.9, WSJM, this is Our Take. And to close out today's edition of the program, I thought we'd hear a safety reminder from AAA. It's always a good time for a safety reminder from AAA. We had a time change this past weekend, so AAA put out a notice to everyone to be wary of drowsy driving. I chatted with AAA's Gary Bubar. Let's hear what he had to tell me. All right, Gary, we had a time change on Sunday, and that means AAA is putting out a notice to drivers. What are you telling them?
Well, with the change to daylight saving time, even though it's only an hour, that has the equivalent of changing time zones, and even an hour can make a difference in not only how we sleep, but the amount that we sleep.
Do we have any data to suggest crashes increase following a time change?
Well, we see a brief blip. It's not a significant change, but we do see crashes that do occur, not necessarily involving a death or an injury, but we know that fatigue is a problem when driving. As many as, you know, a third of drivers out there report having driven when they were very tired.
Right. Well, you know, people have to go to work. It is not easy to do just to avoid driving because you're tired.
Well, as much as you can. We know sometimes that folks are going to be, you know, heading to work on their commute in the morning, no matter. And the key is to take care of that the night before. Try and stay in your routine. Whatever time you normally go to bed at that time. Whatever time you get up, normally get up. We all suffer from sleep debt, and a lot of that has to do with inconsistencies in how we sleep, not just during the week, but on the weekends too. We all love to sleep in on the weekends, but really in order to maximize the best sleep for regenerating your body is to try and sleep the same hours, whether it's the weekend or during the work week.
That's interesting. I never thought about that, but you know, I am always very exhausted on Mondays, despite the fact that I get a whole lot of sleep over the weekend.
It doesn't take that much. And then all of a sudden, you know, we change our hours back because we're changing them to a sleep-in period on Saturday morning, if you will, and then to a get-up-early on Monday morning. And just that amount of time can make it tough for your body to adjust.
All right, and I know AAA has some statistics here, something like 10% of all traffic crashes involve someone just being too tired.
Well, most of them involve a reaction issue, a vehicle in front of you that slowed and didn't notice it in time, or a drive off the road situation where if you're driving by, you know, yourself, not many cars around, it's a more secluded area, you may find yourself nodding off a little bit, and that can be either on the way to or from work in, you know, early in the morning, and it's with the daylight now coming later, we're driving to work in the dark more. And so be aware of that. And the easiest way, as I said, to take care of that is the night before. Get enough rest the night before.
And, of course, after a chime change, watching out for pedestrians, young people, et cetera, that's always a concern.
Particularly now, we've got high school kids that may be dressed in darker colors, going to school early. A lot of those kids start school at 7:30 in the morning, and so they're walking to school in the dark, oftentimes with headsets on, something like that. So be aware of your surroundings. Be aware that kids don't always cross at crosswalks. Neither do adults. So be aware of what's going on around you and recognize that you may be a little fatigued.
We're talking with AAA's Gary Bubar about this past weekend's time change. AAA says that's the time to make sure that you stay on your sleep schedule so you don't wind up getting into a crash involving drowsiness. Anything else you would like to add, Gary?
For longer trips, make sure that if you're tired, get out and walk around a little bit, about every hour and a half to 2 hours. Give yourself the opportunity to get out and stretch. Instead of going through the drive-through, you know, park, get out, walk around a little bit, and, you know, that'll give you a chance to get some fresh air and get out of that vehicle environment just for a moment and take some of that roadway hypnosis away.
Okay, that was AAA's Gary Bubar. They just put out this reminder, 10% of crashes involve people being too drowsy. And this is a week when many people are too drowsy because we just changed our clocks. We lost an hour of sleep. That disrupts sleep cycles. AAA's advice is don't change the time that you go to bed or get up. Not even on the weekend, apparently. That's AAA's advice. I appreciate Gary's time talking with us on Our Take. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for another edition of The Our Take. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we'll talk with State Representative Dave Pagel. He's running for State Senate. We'll learn about that on tomorrow's show. We'll also check in with the Michigan Department of Treasury to find out about what they do to prevent tax scams this time of year and how you can protect yourself. And we will hear from the Michigan League for Public Policy about a proposal to create work requirements for Medicaid recipients. The Michigan League for Public Policy does not think it's a good idea. We'll find out why on tomorrow's edition of Our Take. If you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This has been another edition of Our Take. You have a fantastic rest of your day.